Good afternoon. First of all, we're going to go a little bit out of order today. We're just going to start. We're going to start right away with a quick word for our sponsor. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam Shehakol Neyeh B'Dvaro. I had some dental work done today. Thank God my dentist just moved to Coolidge. He used to be all the way at Lasher. He just got a beautiful Wolfson family dentistry. They've got a new building. It's beautiful. It's right here in Coolidge, right around the corner from my house. Baruch Hashem. And he did a beautiful job, but my mouth is still like half numb, half not. So if I start speaking and whatever, and weirdness comes out, it's not me. It's the numbed upness. I think God loves us, everyone here in this room. I think God loves you all, because it's been freezing the whole week, and then suddenly today, just before our class started, the temperature actually rose above freezing for the first time in probably 7 or 8 days, and now it's a positively balmy 34 degrees outside. I think God is just winking at us. He's just winking at us and saying, yeah, thank you for going to the class. I'm going to make it easier for you. So I want to thank you as well for coming out here. We're starting a new series today, The Passion of Passover, The Passion of Pesach. So please give yourselves a nice warm round of applause. I also want to thank the amazing staff of Yeshiva Beth Yehuda, Partners Detroit, and Prime 10, of course, for setting up this beautiful Lunch and Learn and making it happen so beautifully every single week. Okay.
The rabbi.
Yeah. If you thank him. Okay. So, we are now, we literally just are just starting to move away from Purim, and we're moving towards Pesach. And when we look at the Jewish calendar, we see something interesting. Pesach is exactly half a year after what holiday? Not Rosh Hashanah, because Rosh Hashanah is on the first day of Tishrei. Sukkot, right. The Jewish holiday of Sukkot. The Jewish holiday of Sukkot is the 15th day of Tishrei, and the Jewish holiday of Pesach is the 15th day of Nisan. They're exactly 6 months apart. Now, interestingly enough, the holiday of Sukkot celebrates the clouds of glory with which God held us and coddled us, so to speak, when we left Egypt. And that actually happened more closer to the time of Pesach than to the time of Sukkot. So it's very appropriate that they're sort of exactly half a year across from each other. And they both celebrate a very similar idea, the sort of divine redemption, divine protection. Leading up to Sukkot, there is a very long period of self-development. There's the whole entire month of Elul. There is Rosh Hashanah and there's Yom Kippur. And leading up to Pesach, there's also a very intensive time of self-development. The very first law in the Orach Chaim. So Orach Chaim is the Jewish code of law, specifically the section that deals with day-to-day laws, right? The Jewish code of law was written by Rav Yosef Karo in the late 1500s. Also, at the same time, it was being written by Rav Moshe Isserles, who lived in Krakow. And they sort of merged. The vast majority of the Jewish code of law is the one written by Rav Yosef Karo. Wherever there's different laws for the Ashkenazic Jewry, you'll see it put into a gloss. So, one of the sections of the Jewish code of law, there's four different sort of pillars. One pillar is Orach Chaim, the way of life, and it discusses all the laws of daily living. Everything from during a regular day, laws from waking up, blessings, prayers, Shema, Tzitzis, Tefillin, Kosher, Birchas, Kosher is dealt with more extensively in other areas of the Jewish code of law, but when to bless and how to make blessings, and then all the laws of Shabbos and all the laws of the holidays. So when it comes to the first of the laws of the holidays, which is the laws of Pesach, it's found in chapter 429 in the Jewish code of law. And the first law is that 30 days before Passover, we should start learning the laws of Passover. So we are right now, we're probably not 30 days, we're about 27, 26 days away from Passover. This is a very appropriate time to be here and to start learning about Passover. And just like in the time leading up to Sukkot, there is Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, which is a time where we're sort of clearing out our moral inventory. During this time of the year, we're cleaning out our physical inventory, i.e. removing the chametz from our homes, which is the main mitzvah of this period of the year. And we know that the removal of the chametz from our property is very much in line with the removal of moral problems that we would be doing right at the same time, on the exact other side of the Hebrew calendar, right? So leading up to Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, you'd be cleaning out your moral inventory. Now we're cleaning out our houses. And today we're going to see that those things are very, very deeply connected. Both of those periods are periods of cleansing. Interestingly enough, on Yom Kippur, which is the 10th of Tishrei, corresponds exactly with the 10th of Nisan. What was unique about the 10th day of Nisan? On the 10th day of Nisan is when the Jewish people took the Egyptian god, the sheep, and tied it to their bedposts, saying, "We're going to slaughter this." And all the Egyptians were looking at them with murderous rage in their eyes. "You're going to slaughter our gods?" I mean, imagine if in America, with all the Jews on right now, this day, we took all the cables from like cable TV and said we were going to cut the cable right before March Madness. There would be utter devastation. There'd be pogroms in the streets. People would be murdering Jews in cold blood. "You're going to cut our cable before March Madness? You crazy?" Right? So in Egypt, on the 10th day of Nisan, we were sort of cutting the cable. We were cutting our relationship with the gods of the Egyptians. That maybe in the many years that we had been living in Egypt, we had become sort of attracted to and accustomed to the ways of the Egyptians amongst whom we were living. And here we were saying, we're cutting this out. That was correspondence the 10th day of Nisan, which exactly corresponds with Yom Kippur, which is the ultimate day of removing all of the influences that we get, the negative influences that we get from the world around us. So we see a very interesting correlation between sort of the two bookends of the year, the high holidays and the Passover, which are exactly 6 months apart, and for very good reason. Hold on a second. Another thing I just want to point out is that the fact that we're all here today is very important. Because when we prepare for a mitzvah, the mitzvah takes meaning, much deeper meaning for us. When we prepare for a holiday, the holiday will mean more for us. If we were to walk into Pesach, okay, without going to a single class or without going learning up on it or whatever it is, it doesn't really carry that much weight, right? Imagine, okay, so you're going to go have a conversation with your buddy. You call him up, "Hey, let's go watch the game," right? Right, Burnham came and cut our cable. We need to go to the bar to watch it there, right? All right, whatever. You just go. You don't sit there on the way in your car on the way to meet with your friend, or you go to meet your friend in Starbucks for coffee. You're not sitting there the whole way on the way to Starbucks thinking about, well, what should I say, and what, I don't know, and researching, right? You go in for a conversation with your friend. It's nice, but it's not, you know, earth-shatteringly important. However, if, for example, you were just fresh out of school and you had went to school for dietetics and you're about to get your interview with Beaumont or Henry Ford, which is exactly what you've wanted your entire life. You've wanted to go to a hospital and work in the dietetics department, making sure that patients get proper nutrition. And you spent years and years of your life preparing for this, right? Meaning you went to high school, of course, and then elementary and college, and then you went to a special master's program in dietetics. All these years, and now there's the main two places you want to work. Well, there's maybe three places. You want to work Beaumont, DMC, or Henry Ford. Those are really where you want to work. And you're about to go in for your interview with Beaumont. You're not just going in unprepared. You're probably going to go on Beaumont's website and read about their company culture and the values that they hold, and you'll casually sprinkle the same ideas they talk about in their website as their core values into your conversation. You're going to make sure that you are very, very well prepared for this interview. You're going to think very carefully about what you're going to wear to this interview, right? You're going to really spend the time because it's something very, very meaningful to you. Whereas going out with your friend to Starbucks, it's great, it's nice, it's fun, but it's not very, very impactful on your life. The same thing comes when it comes to Jewish holidays. If we just kind of walk up to, you know, Passover, we're so busy with all that we're doing and da-da-da, and then we just walk up to Passover, we didn't learn about it, we didn't go to classes, we didn't read up on it, and we just kind of waltz into Passover. Passover's not going to have that much meaning. Yeah, okay, I know, we're going to the Seder, to my brother-in-law for this one, and we're going to my aunt and uncle the other one. And if that's the if that's all that you've prepared, if the most that you prepared is that you changed your suit and went over for a Seder, you're missing out. You're not going to you don't value that holiday. And it's not going to have a great impact on you. But if you spend the month ahead of time, as the Jewish code of law says, spending the month ahead of time learning about it, going to classes like this and coming and really trying to grow from the experience, it's going to have a deeper effect on you. Okay. So now we get, and one more example, talking about this whole, like, sort of cleansing process. What are we going to read in the in Shul this Shabbos? So this Shabbos is a Shabbos called Parshas Parah, where we read about the Parah Aduma, the red heifer, which was what they would use in temple times to sprinkle upon somebody who had become ritually impure to purify them. And again, we read it around this time of year because we are going through a cleansing process. This time of year, the time leading up to Passover, is a cleansing process. So now we want to understand today, before we get next couple weeks, we'll talk more about the greatness of Passover and the various ideas. We'll talk messages from the Haggadah, etc., etc. This week, I really want to dedicate first to bashing chametz. Right? We're gonna go on a little chametz hate fest today. Okay? Why? Because the Torah seems to go on a hate fest on chametz. Chametz is a very unique law, right? There are many things in the Torah that are prohibited, right? For example, meat and milk together. But if, for example, you have meat and milk together that, you know, somehow you're in the middle of cooking your steak and a whole, you know, gallon of milk fell on it or whatever it is, it's totally not kosher. The Torah is not telling you, go quickly burn it and then search all the corners of your house to see if there's any cracks. The way the Torah asks of us to go after our chametz is very unique. Other things that are forbidden, for example, there's forbidden animals, obviously, you know, like pork, for example, or shellfish. Then there are forbidden, so milk and meat is forbidden, but also different parts of a kosher animal, of a cow, are forbidden, like the gid hanasha, the sciatica nerve, or various organs that are called chelev, that are called a certain kind of forbidden fats. If someone made a dish on Shabbos by mistake, they didn't realize it was Shabbos, and they cooked a dish on Shabbos, they're not allowed to eat from that dish. There are a lot of different things that are prohibited, but it's literally only when it comes to chametz that the Torah says, we're going to go on a hunt, and we're going to find that, and we're going to destroy it, we're going to burn it, we're going to flush it down our toilets, we're going to go after it with a vengeance. So what exactly is it about chametz that the Torah goes after it? Let's go for some of the sources. Let's see how many times the Torah goes out of its way to tell us not to eat chametz. Here we go. The first one, Exodus 12, 16, 15. For 7 days you shall eat matzos, but on the first day, prior to the first day, you shall remove all leaven from your houses. For whoever eats chametz, his soul shall be cut off from the Jewish people from the first day until the seventh day. That's one source. Next, three verses later, for 7 days you shall not find any leaven in your house, for anyone who eats from the leaven will be cut off from the congregation of Israel and the convert and the citizen of the land. Next, a chapter later, Exodus chapter 13, verse 3, and Moshe said to the people, remember the day that you left Egypt from the house of slavery, because with a great hand, with a strong hand, Hashem removed you from this, and you shall not eat any chametz. Like, where does it even get in? Next, now we go another, a few verses later. You shall eat matzos for 7 days, and you shall not see any chametz, and you shall not see any leaven in all of your boundaries. right? In all of your boundaries, if you own a store, if you own a shoe store, you cannot have any chametz in your shoe store. If you own a ranch, a huge ranch, you know, acres and acres and acres, you can't have any chametz in your ranch. Like, there's no other prohibition that we see almost like the Torah is going after it with a vengeance. We're not done yet, though. Now we go to Leviticus 2:11. All of the flour offerings, all of the meal offerings that you shall bring to Hashem, you shall not make them out of chametz, because no leaven and no honey shall be brought up as a burnt offering to Hashem. Next, Deuteronomy 16:3, you shall not eat any chametz. For 7 days you shall eat matzahs, the bread of the affliction. For in a hurry you left Egypt, in order that you shall remember the day going out of Egypt all the days of your life. And you shall not have, there shall be not seen to you any leaven in all your boundaries for 7 days. Verse after verse after verse, the Torah is going after chametz with a vengeance. The Talmud brings in the name of a great sage named Rabbi Alexandri. It's an interesting story how Alexander became a Jewish name. Alexander the Great, on his conquest of the world, stopped in Israel and the anti-Semitic Jews, right? Because unfortunately, throughout Jewish history, we've had anti-Semitic Jews, right? We've had Jews who were Jewish, but worked against Jewish values, and often under the banner of Jewish values, right? And we see it today. People, I don't know if you know this, but J Street, which is, of course, J stands for Jewish. It's supposed to be a Jewish organization. J Street told Obama at one point that it would be okay to allow airstrikes against Israel. Just crazy. Craziness. Yeah, because Israel is an apartheid state. This is, unfortunately, Jews who are going around and you know what's crazy? I was just reading this morning. We all know that there were Jews who supported the Nazi Party early on. Of course, later on, there were none. But early on, there were Jews who supported the Nazi Party. They said, listen, if we give money to the Nazi Party, we'll be able to gain power here, and then we'll be able to, yeah, there's some ideologies. Really, it's really about being nationalistic and building up the national strength, which is what we're all for. We love national strength. We consider Germany our homeland. And therefore, if you have a political party that's going to build up Germany, let's support them. Yeah, they talk bad about the Jews, but you know what? We've been dealing with that for years. We'll support them, and we'll get in there, and we'll turn things around. And you see today, Jews who are supportive of just trying to crush Israel, this poor little state, this poor little country in the Middle East, beset upon by haters in every single corner of the world. The entire UN is denouncing us more than it denounces everybody else in the world. One little country. And you have Jews who all they want to spend their time doing is bashing Israel. Anyway. But in the time of Alexander the Great, there were Jewish anti-Semites too. And they went to Alexander the Great. They wanted him to destroy the rabbis and the temple. And the Kohen Gadol, whose name was Shimon HaTzadik, Shimon the Righteous, he came out with a delegation to meet Alexander and make sure that Alexander would not have his ears turned by these anti-Semitic Jews. And he came out, he was walking with a big delegation of people, and Alexander is coming forward on his horse in front of his whole army. And as the delegations get closer and closer, Alexander the Great got off his horse and bowed down and kissed Shimon HaTzadik, the Kohen Gadol, the high priest. And his people couldn't believe it. Alexander the Great doesn't bow before anyone. The whole world was bowing before Alexander the Great. He was steamrolling over the whole world. But he said, Alexander the Great said, every time I have a big battle ahead of me, the night before, I go to sleep and I see this old regal man come to me and tell me that I'll be successful. And it's this man. My success is his success. And he let the Jews go. And he didn't bother the Jews at all. It wasn't until after he died and his kingdom was split up between his generals, and that's when the whole Hanukkah story started happening. So the Jews made a decree that every male child born that year should be named Alexander. And to this day, Alexander is a Jewish name. So Rav Alexandri, one of the great sages, used to say, when he would pray, he would say, Master of the universe, you know that all we want to do, Ritzoneinu lasos ritzonecha, we want to serve you. We want to do your will. We want to do what's right. That's what deep down every single person, we want to be heroes, right? I don't mean heroes in the media. We want to be big people. We want to feel great about ourselves. We want to be selfless. We want to give. We want to use our time properly. We want to use our mouths properly. We want to learn self-control. We want to be people who are givers and givers instead of takers and takers. We want to appreciate other people in our lives. We want to appreciate our relationship with God. So, Rav Alexandria would say, you know that we want to do your will. Umama Akev, what's holding us back? Seor Sheba Isa, the leaven in the bread, and Shibud Malchios, and the subjugation of the kingdoms around us. So many of us are either forced, many times throughout Jewish history, the nations around us forced us, literally, did not allow us to do mitzvahs, tried to forcibly remove us from mitzvahs and Torah. And today, we're not being forced at all, but unfortunately, so many of us are so enthralled of the values of the world around us that we lose track of our own values. And he would continue his prayer, it should be the will before you that you should remove these obstacles from us, and we will go back to do your will with a full heart. So the two things holding us back from our greatness are the subjugation of the nations, right? The influence of the world around us, which is so strong, makes us believe that the most important thing is the money or the fashion or the, you know, whatever it is, the philosophies that are running around today. Or the leaven in the bread. What's the leaven in the bread? Has the leaven in the bread ever spoke up to you and said, hey, why don't you go gossip? It's a Thursday afternoon. It would be a great day to go gossiping, right? We have leavened bread right here. You guys had sandwiches today. Did the sandwiches tell you anything? Were there any subliminal messages in your sandwich? The Seor Sheba Isa, the leaven in the bread that Rabbi Alexandri is referring to, he's referring to our Yetzer Hara, our negative inclination. So everything about this chametz, about this leaven, seems to be getting a really, really bad rap. Furthermore, why do we eat matzah on Pesach? That's an open question. Anyone want to tell me, why do we eat matzah on Pesach? Because the dough didn't have time to rise when we left Egypt. Was that fair? Everyone agree? Is that a fair answer?
Right. Yeah.
Okay, let me tell you a secret. The Jews left on the 15th day of Nisan around noon. Okay? That's when they left Egypt at noon. Why did they leave Egypt at noon? Because they didn't want to be seen after the death of the firstborn, which happened on the 15th of Nisan at midnight. Right? The Egyptians came to the Jews and said, get out. Get out. Right? Get out of our country. Enough. We've had frogs and pestilence and lice and wild beasts and hail and locusts. Exactly. We're done. Just get out of our country. Pharaoh was begging, leave, leave. The Jews said, hold on a second. We'll leave. We're going to leave at noon. Why are we going to leave at high noon, as they call it? High noon is known as high noon because it's when the sun is the highest point in the sky. We're going to leave at high noon because we don't want anyone to say that we snuck out of Egypt. No, no, no. We are leaving on our terms. God is taking us out with all of his might and all of his power. We're leaving on our terms. So the Jews left Egypt at noon on Passover. Okay?
Daylight saving.
Do you know what time noon is? High noon in Detroit is right now? High noon today. Well, actually, you could probably find it in your iPhone if you have one. I think it's around 1:45. Oh wait, no, you don't have. It doesn't show noon. What? Someone know? I think it's about 1:45. So high noon today. When I say high noon, meaning the point where the sun is the highest in the horizon, is about 1:45. So the Jews left at high noon. The night before the Jews left, before the death of the firstborn, the Jews ate the Korban Pesach, the very first Paschal offering, right? That was the whole thing. On the 10th day of Nisan, they took the sheep, they brought it into their house, they were showing the Egyptians, we're going to slaughter your gods, we're leaving this whole Egyptian mentality behind, we're slaughtering it. They slaughtered it on the 14th day of Nisan, on Erev Pesach, right before Passover. And they ate it in their homes at the very first sort of Passover Seder on the 15th by night. What was on the menu that night? Lamb chop. What else was on the menu that night?
Chopped liver.
Chopped liver. Perhaps. Perhaps chopped liver. Why not celebrate with a good pate, right? Yeah. What was on the menu that night was matzah. I'll read you the verse. This is Moses commanding the Jewish people to bring, to eat the very first Paschal offering, which again was eaten way before they left Egypt. V'achlu es habasar b'layla hazeh, and you will eat the meat on this night. Tzli esh, roasted. It specifically had to be roasted, not cooked. U'matzos al merorim yochluhu, and you should eat it with matzah and maror. So they were eating matzah before they ever had to leave Egypt in a hurry. Furthermore, they were given 4 days advance before they had to shecht, before they had to slaughter the Paschal offering. 4 days in advance, they brought the sheep into their home and tied it to their bed. God knew they were leaving. If God wanted, he could have all said, by the way, guys, we're heading out on a road trip. Please make bread. But think about it, right? God could have said, just make a lot of bread. At one time, I remember I was on a flight. It was amazing. Jews, we're like obsessed with food. We really are. Now, that's the problem with being a rabbi. As a rabbi, you go to Jewish functions. And every Jewish function, no matter what, has food, right? I was once on a flight. This is a true story. I was on a flight, I was flying from Israel back to New York, and I was flying British Airways. So it was, you know, it was a stopover flight. You fly Tel Aviv, Heathrow, JFK, okay? On the flight with me was a family, an English family, I could tell by their accents. And they were flying, and on to the there were a large family, a bunch of married, there were some single kids, some married kids. They brought on the plane with them at least, could be more. I saw one entire carry-on filled with food. And one of the son-in-laws was sitting next to me, and the whole flight, it's like a stream of brother-in-laws, a little young, hey, you want some schnitzel? Hey, you want some kugel? So I said, are you guys continuing on from here to Australia or something? Like, no, they're getting off in London. It's a 4-hour flight. You go 4 hours in between lunch and dinner. It's like, this is absurd. It was crazy. It was a parade of food. So God knew they were leaving Egypt. He could have said to them, guys, just like I'm asking you to prepare this sheep, and you've got it 4 days in advance, do me a favor. Make some sandwiches. Prepare some sandwiches. But no, that's not how it was told. The way it was set up, the fact that we didn't have time to let our dough rise was because it was very specifically set up in such a way that when the time came to leave, we were told, okay, now go, immediately, without any time, and therefore we didn't have time to let our dough rise. But that was engineered. 100% engineered. And again, we were eating matzah the night before already. So matzah is clearly part of the redemption story, even prior to the actual, we didn't have time to let the dough rise. Even the day before, when they were preparing their Paschal offering for that night, and they had all the time in the world to prepare some nice bread, some nice pita, they were told to eat matzah. Now, parenthetically, by the way, they probably did eat pita. Meaning, what is the definition of matzah versus chametz? What is the definition of chametz? Right, so it doesn't rise. How long, well, now you think, now normally you say, well, dough takes, you know, you have to put the Red Star yeast or the Fleischmann's yeast, right? That's not true. There's yeast actually all around us. In the air, right now there's yeast, right? There's yeast floating around, particles of yeast floating around right now. And if you let dough rise even on its own, it won't rise as nicely as when you put in Fleischmann's rapid rise, but it will rise on its own. The number we say is about 18 minutes, okay? Now, if you've ever gone to one of these places in Israel where they make like super fresh, I don't know if you've ever seen this. In Israel, there are a few places that make super, super fresh pita and laffa. And what do? They take the flour and the dough and the water, maybe a little salt. I don't know if they put salt in oil, whatever it is. They mix it into a batter and they have like a metal dome. And they have a huge fire going on inside the dome. And they just pour, like they ladle the batter right on, and boom, within 20 seconds, it's they flip it and boom, it's done. And there are Sephardic Jews who eat pita like matzah, right? We don't. We eat cracker like matzah, right? But there are Sephardic Jews who eat pita like matzah, because the only rule is you cannot let it be mixed together for 18 minutes before cooking. But you can make pita matzah. So probably back then they were eating pita matzah. But in any case, that's what they ate before they left Egypt. So this whole thing of like moving away from chametz is not just, well, because by mistake they didn't have what to do, so they ended up walking out without letting their dough rise, and therefore we now eat matzah. It is true that they did not have enough time for their dough to rise. But that was engineered. Chametz was out of the equation way before. So what's the deal with chametz? You know, they tell a story about Rabbi Levi Yitzchak of Berdichev, who was a great Hasidic master and a huge, huge lover of the Jewish people. And he was, you know, a very renowned Hasidic master. He had thousands of followers. And one year, he's about to start his Seder, and he says, he's got hundreds of followers. Hold on, I can't start my Seder yet. I need someone to bring me a little bit of Parisian tobacco from Paris. Now, in those days, well, you're actually, especially those days, you're a lot of smoke on Yom Tov, right? Because smoking is, it's a long story. You're not allowed to smoke ever, which is true. If you're not a smoker, you're not supposed to smoke, but and today also, being that today it's incredibly unpopular, right? There's a certain rule on Yom Tov that certain things that the majority of people do, you're allowed to do. Obviously not everything. It has to be all certain categories of forbidden labor. But smoking is one of the things, especially nowadays, because so few people smoke and it's become so out of vogue to smoke. Therefore, it may not be allowed anymore to smoke, although many halachic rulers say that it is still allowed on Yom Tov. Especially because it helps with digestion, whatever it is, which it does, although it may not help with other things like lung cancer. But in any case, so, and back in the day, people thought it was healthy. Like people used to, I saw a print advertisement for a machine that would radiate your water. Yes, a machine that would expose your drinking water to radiation. This is early, this is from the, I think it was from either the 1920s or the 1930s, right? And people didn't realize the horrible effects that radiation could have on the body. And they thought, you know, people drink a little radiation water and they feel they're glowing. They're, you know, give you a little pep in your step, you know? I mean, literally, that's what it said. I don't remember exactly the language, but it was like, literally, like, put a little pep in your step. Buy this machine and irradiate all your water. It will give you extra energy. It'll help you through your afternoon fatigue. People didn't know. They didn't know better. People used to think smoking was good for you. Up until, you know, whatever it was, I don't know how many years ago when they discovered smoking was bad for you, people thought smoking was good for you. It was considered part of a healthy human lifestyle. Good for your digestive tract. So anyway, he says, I can't start my Seder until I get some Parisian tobacco. Now, tobacco, yeah, you were allowed to smoke on Yom Tov, but Parisian tobacco, they lived in sort of the Russian-dominated areas. And Russia at the time was in fights with most of Europe. and it was absolutely forbidden to own Parisian tobacco on pain of death. It was considered contraband, right? Because you're buying Parisian tobacco, you're supporting the French, right? Mm. And Parisian tobacco was considered to be the finest of the fine. And he says, like, I can't start the Seder. I just need a little bit of Parisian tobacco. Someone says, Rabbi, you have tobacco, Seder, what do you want? He's, go get me some. Some Jew in this town's got to have some Parisian. Go find me some Parisian tobacco. Okay? People set out. 5 minutes later, they come back with a little tin of Parisian tobacco. 5 minutes later. Comes back. He says, okay, we're about to start. He starts pouring the wine. He's like, yeah. Before I could start, I need some English tea. English tea? Tonight we drink wine, we don't drink tea. And English tea was also contraband. You could get killed. Literally, the Russian authorities walk in and you had English tea on your table. Boom, you were done. The rabbi says, I'm not starting until I get some English tea. Okay, the Hasidim set out. 5 minutes later, there's a little canister of English tea on his table. He starts pouring the wine. He goes, wait. I need a little bit of chametz that a Jew left over in their house by mistake or something. I need a little Jewish chametz. Chametz on Pesach? What do you... No. We don't have that. He says, no. I'm not starting my Seder. We need to get some a little bit of Jewish chametz. Go find me some... Someone in town's got to have a little bit, something. Maybe an Oreo cookie. Some piece of 7-layer cake they didn't get to under the bed or something. Who knows? Go find me some Jewish chametz. They go out, they come back. Rabbi, we can't find. No, go find. For an hour, all the Hasidim, hundreds of them, are scouring all over town. They come back, they say, Rabbi, it doesn't exist. And he looks up to heaven, he says, Master of the universe, look at your beautiful children. I want Parisian tobacco, it's contraband. Having it is, you could be killed for it. I get it here in 5 minutes. I want a little bit of English tea, contraband. You could get killed for it. 5 minutes, I have my English tea. I ask for a little bit of chametz from a Jew. And no matter what, for an hour they're searching. There is no chametz to be had. Look how devoted your children are to you. Master in the universe, bring us home. Isn't that beautiful? So what is the anger at the chametz? The chametz is a creep. Chametz is a creep. Because chametz gets in your heart. Did anybody here ever watch a dough rise? Yeah. You have? You watched it rise?
Well, yeah, I make it. When I make challah, I watch it until it comes to a certain spot, and then it's ready to...
So I'm just curious. So you sit down?
No, I don't sit down.
You mix in your Fleischmann's Rapid Rise, and you sit there, and you watch it.
No. But I watch it at like every hour.
Right.
I look at it.
And then it's bigger every hour, right?
Yes.
That's the amazing thing. You can't really watch chametz rise. It happens way too slowly. But it just creeps up and creeps up and creeps up and starts getting bigger and bigger and worse and worse. Not bigger and bigger. More and more inflated. The Yetzer Hara, the Satan, that's his same M.O. He comes at us. First, he doesn't want you to speak gossip. God forbid, gossip? I don't gossip. No, but you got to warn these people. I saw them on Shabbos hanging out at the Krauss house, and the Krausses, they're. I heard that the husband and wife are constantly fighting and getting into arguments. I just need to warn them, and then I just need to tell this other person about this, and slowly but surely, before you know it, you are the town gossip. You are the guy. When we don't watch, things start to happen with chametz. When we're not careful, when we're not cognizant of what we're doing, the Zohar says, this is the problem with chametz. Chametz represents the unintentional life. Whoa. Okay, there you go. It was an avalanche. Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, look up at the awning when you exit. Make sure nothing's coming down. Chametz represents the unintentional life. My activities, my values are slowly devolving without me even being cognizant of it. Because it happens slowly, like a dough rising. You don't see it. You don't see it happening. But you come back in your refrigerator, and an hour later, it's suddenly like this. And you start looking back at your life. You're like, wait, how did I get here? How did I get so comfortable with not being completely honest? How did I get so comfortable with that? How did I get so comfortable with gossip? How did I get so comfortable with spending all of my time focused on me and barely doing any... When I was younger, I remember I used to volunteer for this. I was all fired up for that. And now, what happened to that? Where did it all go? Where did those years go by? Where did my sense of selflessness and drive to do for others? Where did my relationship with God go? I used to talk to Him with such feeling. I was raising my kids and I was always concerned about their health. I used to talk to God, I'd beg Him, I meant it, I was appreciative. Where did that go? The unintentional life. The Torah says about the matzah, Ushamartem es hamatzos, you shall watch the matzos. Life has to be watched. Life has to be intentional. Life has to be measured and metered. When life becomes a creep and things just start to happen, and we're barely noticing it, that's a problem. And comes Pesach every year, we say we got to start searching in the nooks and the crannies. Where did we go? I had this past Shabbos afternoon, I had the great honor and privilege of having a very inspired group of individuals from University of Michigan at my house. They were here for a Shabbaton with Rabbi Fali Eisenberger from the Jewish Research Center in Ann Arbor. And they came to my house for the third meal. And we had Mr. Gary Torgo spoke for them. It was very, very beautiful. And then afterwards, because we were leading into Purim, so we had some extra time. And we sort of had like an informal question and answer session. And I don't remember the exact question, but I remember saying to them, I want you to get very comfortable with living a life that's inconsistent with the truth. Right? I definitely raised a couple eyebrows. I said, yeah, I want you to get very comfortable with living a life that's inconsistent with the truth. Some people are like, okay, Rabbi, I got that. No problem. Thank you. Why? Because when we have to make choices, there's two ways that we can deal with inconsistency with the truth. None of us are perfect. Let's hope. Right? Because if you think you are, that's another conversation. Please see me after we're done. Right? None of us are perfect. So how do I deal with my imperfections? So there's one of two ways. I don't feel comfortable with it, right? I'm not being consistent with the truth. The truth is, I probably should give more charity. The truth is, I probably should volunteer more time. The truth is, I probably should stop talking so much gossip. The truth is, I probably should call my sister I haven't spoken to in 9 years. The truth is, we don't feel comfortable with that inconsistency. So what do? We revise the truth. Right? We revise the truth. No, my sister, she didn't deserve a phone call from me. After what happened when our parents died and she wanted the funeral here and I wanted that, she doesn't deserve a call from me. And then we talk about, my mouth is so dirty, I'm cursing. But everyone curses. Everyone curses. Well, I have a guy tell me, I almost never heard a guy tell me, in my industry, no one curses. Because I talk to individuals like, dads, I'm not talking about kids. I'm talking about people in their 30s, 40s, 50s, and their language. I'm like, oh, you in my industry, that's just the way we talk. What does that mean? I don't understand. What does that mean? You talk in a way that if you were on the radio, they'd be bleeping out every sentence a few words. And it's okay because in your industry, that's how they talk? Since when has that been the metric for righteousness? It's absurd. But we tell ourselves that that's okay. That's an example of where we take the truth and we bend it. We say we change the truth so that we're no longer inconsistent with the truth. Our life is okay, even though our mouth is a trash heap. But that's okay because it's my truth, because of my industry. That's how we talk. We just change the truth. That's one thing we can do. We can change our truth and get comfortable that way, but then we're lying to ourselves. Or we can say, I shouldn't talk like this. It's terrible that I talk like this. I've been influenced by my industry. I'm working to change it. I'm comfortable with being inconsistent with the truth. I'm big enough to admit that my life is not lived exactly as I should. I'm ready to call out the creep inside of me. And yes, even though at first I never used to talk like this, and I didn't grow up in my house, my parents didn't raise me cussing like that. Somehow in my life it just creeped in, like the chametz creeps in, but I'm ready to call it out and say that's wrong, I shouldn't do it. I know maybe why I do it, because I've been living in an industry where everyone does it, but it's 100% wrong. Be comfortable with being inconsistent with the truth. Be big enough to be okay with saying what my life is not what my life should be. There's been some creep here. A little bit of Yetzer Hara has gotten into me. I talk too much gossip. I don't have enough respect for my friends. I don't call my parents often enough. I don't, and so on and so forth. Be comfortable with that. What's the second step? After you learn how to be comfortable with inconsistencies between your life and the truth? Be uncomfortable. Be uncomfortable with the inconsistency between your life and the truth. That's what chametz is. Chametz is that once a year where we say, if we want to have redemption, we got to figure out what the creep in my life is. And yes, by the way, the Jews, when they left Egypt, they had been there for hundreds of years, and they had picked up a lot of things from the Egyptians, including idol worship. Their great-grandparents didn't serve any idols. Their great-grandparents were Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Abraham was willing to throw himself into a fire rather than serve an idol. But over the years, when you're in Egypt, you know, that's what they do, that's what we do, it's okay, don't worry. That Christmas tree today doesn't really mean, well, take a picture with Santa, it's fun, it's cute. Instead of just the creep starts to happen. Pesach is where we say we can't have redemption when we have that in our life. Life has to be lived intentionally. We need to know where are the corners in our heart where that got in and that changed. The night before they left Egypt, even before they got out of Egypt, even before they didn't have time to let the dough rise, they were eating matzah. Because if they wanted to move out of the Egyptian lifestyle, which the Egyptian lifestyle was the epitome of the just do it lifestyle, which today is the epitome of American life. Just do it, whatever, everyone's doing it, who cares? The way we talk, the way we act, it doesn't, just do it, just be like everybody else. That creep had led so much into the Jew, had bled so much into the Jewish lifestyle that if they wanted to be able to have a proper Pesach, even before they got out of Egypt, they had to be eating matzah. Matzah is made with alacrity. I worked in a matzah factory. When you work in a matzah factory, everything is intentional. Every 18 minutes, a bell is going off and the whole place is being cleaned out. Every 18 minutes, literally. There's a bell in the matzah factory. And they start the run, they push the timer, and everyone's zooming around. Everything's being made quickly. You got to watch the way they knead the dough. It's amazing. This they had a huge bowl. One guy pours in the flour from a separate room, because God forbid the water and the dough should be in the flour should be in the same room. No, very intentional. Other room, then the guy opens, knocks on the door, the other guy pours in the water. Then there's this guy, he's got a stainless steel bowl. He goes like this, he's kneading the dough. It's like the Tasmanian devil attacking it. It's unreal. The whole thing spins at like 8,000 RPM. Matzah represents hyper-intentionality. You know what's going on in your life on a minute-to-minute basis. You're living your life because you're living the life that you want to live, not because the creep just got the best of you. And that, my friends, defines the hunt for the chametz. For the next month, for this leading up to Passover, we're not just looking under the drawers or under the couch to see if by mistake a chocolate chip cookie made its way down there, which we are. But what we're really looking is where in our life has the chametz creeped in. And if we're able to eradicate that when we sit down at our Seder, we can experience amazingly true redemption. And we'll talk more about that next week. Thank you so much for coming, and I look forward to seeing you next week.
I'm going to be in Eastern Ohio this week.
Oh, you are?
Tomorrow. Where are your kids?
Why is this a question? What muscle or passion?